This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from Master Dogen's Shobogenzo, the chapter, the fascicle, refrain from unwholesome action. Ancient Buddhas say, refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action, purify your mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. This is the teaching of all Buddhas, the teaching, practice, and enlightenment of hundreds, thousands, and myriads of Buddhas. This is often translated as cease from harm, from all that is harmful, do all that is good, and train and master the mind. And so I wanted to speak about this a little bit today in terms of how this is so much the heart of Buddha Dharma, and also really it's the practice of Sesshin. Many of the sutras, the early sutras, translate wholesome and unwholesome, these two ways of describing the different kinds of actions that we can engage in. And when I think of wholesome, you know, I kind of think of Leave It to Beaver, you know, or the Waltons or something. you know, wholesome, but not very interesting. And wholesome here is really, as is true with so many of the teachings, and this is why our study is so important, is to really understand what does it mean by this? What does wholesome mean? So from the very beginning, the Buddha presented his teachings or the path as being made up of three essential aspects. Moral living, living in accord with compassion. And within that, the discipline of the precepts. So to begin to work with our body, speech, and thoughts in a way that is not continuing to create harmful or unwholesome karma. Samadhi, calming the mind, bringing the mind into focus and stability so that we can study it and so that we can bring our attention to whatever we want to study. And prajna, within that study, we illuminate, because the mind of samadhi is very powerful. It's like a bright light. So our distracted mind is kind of like an incandescent bulb that just throws the light out in all directions. The mind of samadhi brings all of that power out of its diffusion into one focused stream, which makes it very powerful. And so these three trainings are not separate. They all interpenetrate. And the Buddha made it clear how. In one sutra, he said, for one who is virtuous, who lives a wholesome life or doesn't create harm, non-remorse will arise. You won't experience regret. And for one who is free of regret, remorse, gladness will arise, which naturally leads to joy. Your body will be serene, you'll experience happiness, and your mind will be concentrated. It is a natural law for one with a concentrated mind to know and see things as they really are. And so this is a very powerful statement he makes here, because he makes the connection, the very direct connection between leading a virtuous life, which it doesn't mean a self-righteous life. It means a life that isn't creating harm and that is doing good. It's very simple, but not so easy to do. But he makes a direct connection between that and realization, enlightenment. Because when we are living well, we don't have regret, right? We all know this. We also all know the converse, that when we aren't making good choices, we do have regret. And regret is a very powerful force, right? And although we may feel it, experience it as a kind of negative thing because it's painful, right? It's burdensome. It can have a very powerful effect to get our attention, right? Because we don't want to keep experiencing that kind of remorse. And so if we're making good choices, we will recognize what brought that into being and make different choices, live a more wholesome life. And so when we don't have that regret, then gladness will arise. And perhaps here he means the gladness of the four immeasurables. So to be glad, to know gladness is to appreciate, to see and recognize and appreciate, and to be gladdened in your heart by the good things that you see happening in the world, and particularly with other people. So when you see other people having good luck, good fortune, accomplishing things, succeeding, that rather than feeling like in some way that diminishes you, right? And so we become jealous or envious, it does exactly the opposite. It gladdens our heart. It makes us happy to see other people doing well. And so when we don't have regret, that kind of magnanimity, that kind of gladness arises in the heart, and that naturally leads to joyfulness, right? We feel more joyful because we're gladdened not only by our own good endeavors, but by those around us. And so the sources of our joyfulness are magnified, right? When we only care about our own well-being and are only sort of, you know, brought up by our own good experiences, that's very small, right? Because we're just one person. And then he says the body will naturally be serene, right? Not agitated, not disturbed, not upset, but serene. And then we will more easily feel happy, just a general state of happiness, and that leads to a mind that is more concentrated. So it's so important to see how we are one whole being, right? We are one completely interconnected being within ourselves and with each other. Because we could also extend this because of our self-nature, being one nature. When others are virtuous, then non-remorse arises. In the same way that when others around us are not living well, that affects us. Right? That affects us. It may affect us greatly or less so, depending on how connected we are, how empathic we are, how in touch we are with what we're actually feeling. You know, I think of our current state of affairs in our country, right? And how we're sort of in a state of, we're on a national level, we're living within a state of non-virtue, right? Where that's sort of our, the models that we see, right? And that we're sort of being engulfed in every day. And to think of what are the effects of that? You know, we can turn on the news, we can turn off the news. We can have our own political beliefs, but how all of us are being affected by that, that would be one hell of a study. And so it's not just our own individual lives, but those of everyone. And that it's a natural law that out of this lack of regret, gladness, joyfulness, happiness, serenity, the body stable and still, the mind becomes concentrated, and we can see things as they are. We can have insights into self-nature, into the real nature of things. And of course, we all know the opposites of these. When there is regret, right? When we're not living well, we have regret. There is no gladness. It's very hard to be aware of the good things that are happening within us or around us. Our body's agitated, upset, restless. We don't generally feel happy. Our mind is not concentrated, and we don't see things clearly. And so this is part of why in session, why we leave everything, we leave our everyday affairs behind, right? Not because they're not important, but because we need time away when we can sort of step out of the stream and just focus clearly, simply, and directly. And not be so much creating the sources of this agitation and restlessness. And so Sesshin, in that way, is a practice and training within, refraining from unwholesome action. And so refraining from unwholesome action or ceasing from harm. So we can also think of refraining from as ceasing, cessation. Refraining from is suggests sort of the impulse that's already in motion, and we're going to restrain or refrain from that. Cessation you can think of as just allowing that action not to arise, right? It's like a true relaxed state to cease. Dogen says, unwholesome action is the manifestation of one of the three virtues, the wholesome action nature, the unwholesome action nature, and the neutral nature. So these are the three qualities or effects of any action, that it's positive, it's helpful, it's hurtful, or it's neutral. The wholesome action, unwholesome action nature is unborn, just as the wholesome action nature and neutral nature are unborn. These three natures are also non-defiled and are reality. And so this can sound a little, you know, dense, but really what he's saying is, in a certain sense, very simple. That every action has certain kinds of consequences. It may be wholesome, unwholesome, or it has little effect. And that the fundamental nature of every action is pure, right? It's undefiled. The action itself is just action. As soon as it is experienced, as soon as it manifests in relationship to humans, human beings, we experience every action in one of these three ways. And so he lays that out, and then he says, however, these three natures are manifested in various ways. Right? Just underlining that although their nature is unborn, they have consequence. So heavens and hells are created here, in this hall, in this monastery, during this session, before you came, when you go home, when we're practicing, when we're not practicing. Heavens and hells are created right here, each moment, every day. And within every creation, each action is fundamentally undefiled, but it manifests in such a way that it can cause suffering, it can alleviate suffering. And so another way of thinking of wholesome and unwholesome is in terms of skillful. Right? And the language is important because we tend to think of, because we're so ensconced within the sense of a self and a self in everything, that we tend to think that the action is the actor. Right? So when somebody does something that is bad, they're bad. When we do something that is bad or good, we're good. Right? We conflate and create an identity around the action where it's just an action. that is our responsibility, or we're experiencing the consequence of it, but that the action itself is undefiled. And yet, it might be skillful, it might actually be liberating, or it might be unskillful. And so Sesshin, you know, if you think of the Sesshin precautions, and this is where it's important to, you know, go beyond the idea of living by rules. You know, the Buddha said that one of the a primary attachment is to live by rules and doctrine. In other words, to live a kind of dogmatic life, to just follow the rule. Just do what is said to be done. And it's not that following a rule can't help. It can help, right? Particularly when it helps us to refrain from unwholesome action. But much more powerful is when we live not by a rule, but the rule becomes so integrated that it's not a rule anymore. It's just the way we want to live, right? Because then we're not fighting ourselves or fighting something else, but it's coming from within. And so the precautions can seem like, okay, do this, don't do this. But really, they're describing what do we do with our minds, what do we do with our speech, and what do we do with our bodies. During this week of Sesshin, when we're going to be in silence, practicing intensively, in close quarters, right? We're going to spend most of the day together, practicing together, living together. How do we do that? Right? How do we do that from the perspective of those three trainings? That is cultivating compassion, that is refraining from unwholesome action, doing wholesome action, and clarifying your mind. So that's really what the precautions are about. To turn in so that you can calm the mind, to sort of calm the landscape, right? So we shut the front door, the front gate. You know, we're not in the offices very much, those of us who have office work. We shrink the work day. We're not answering the phones, right? We're not communicating outside. We're not reading the news. All of this is to enter inwardly and outwardly to allow ourselves to calm, just let things settle, so that we can do exactly what that passage I read of the Buddha is laying out, and not be so distracted by the things we would normally be distracted by, right? So motion, movement, right? How we have to really pay attention so that when we go from kinhin, zazen, to kinhin, just that subtle movement doesn't distract us. Or that when you hear a sound in the zendo, that movement isn't a distraction. And the point, of course, is not to ultimately live in a bubble, right? But rather to develop our concentration to the point where we're not distracted. We're not distracted by movement. We're not distracted from moving from one posture to another, from stepping outside, from inside. We're not distracted by being in Sesshin or not being in Sesshin. But because that's such a challenge, we have to practice it every day. And so Zazen is like this. And Zazen, you know, when the Buddha taught about mindfulness, you know, and I've given a talk on a couple of times on mindfulness before, it has all of these different aspects to it that are very important. And one of those qualities within mindfulness is ardency. And ardency, the Buddha said, is the desire to avoid what is not beneficial. And he said, how is one ardent? He says, there's a case when the student becomes aware that unarisen negativity, unskillful qualities arising in me would lead to unbeneficial thoughts, words, and actions. There is that self-awareness, right? Or the awareness that they have already arisen, and that I need to that they're not beneficial. I need to practice them. And so he says, a person without ardency. And so within mindfulness is the sense of what is wholesome or not wholesome, what is skillful or not skillful, right? What are the experiences, the sensations, the thoughts even that are helpful, and what are the thoughts that are not helpful? So the awareness or the thought, oh, I lost my awareness, is a helpful thought. The thought, oh, I lost my awareness, you idiot, that's not helpful. Okay, so that's ardency, recognizing that there is a wholesome thought which helps me, right, to maintain my mindfulness, to develop my practice, and there are other thoughts that are not. And that within mindfulness, we're practicing knowing the difference. And not just knowing the difference, but practicing according to those differences. So that when we experience those things that are not helpful, they're not skillful, they don't lead to those qualities, they do lead to regret, right? And so we want to bring forth those qualities within our mindfulness, within our zazen, that don't lead to regret, right? That bring forth joy and serenity within the body and concentration. This is why not judging, not getting into that comparing, self-critical or other critical kind of thinking is so important, because it's undoing, right? Or it's doing what is not helpful. And so he says, a person without ardency, without compunction, that is the sense of consequence. When I do this, this is what happens, right? I don't want that, so I don't want to do this. And that's part, and that's why mindfulness also has the quality of remembering, so that when we're seeing the same thing happen over and over and over again, we can bring forth that compunction and realize every time I've done this, every time I've gone down this path, it's just ended up making me miserable or unhappy. So what if I don't go down that path? So that's compunction. So he says, a person without ardency and without compunction is incapable of self-awakening, incapable of unbinding, incapable of attaining the unsurpassed safety from bondage. A person ardent and compunctious is capable of self-awakening, capable of unbinding, capable of attaining the unsurpassed safety from bondage. And I think whenever we hear the Buddha say, if you follow this path, this is not possible, we should pay attention, right? Because he's not saying, well, maybe, you know, it depends on how you work it. He's saying, no, this is just not going to work. And so he says, if while you're walking, there arises a thought of sensuality, of desire, a thought of anger, a thought of harmfulness, and you don't quickly abandon it, dissolve it, let it go, then you are walking with a lack of ardency and compunction, which is called continually and continuously being lethargic and low in your persistence. That's how he characterizes it. So it's, we're being lethargic, kind of lazy, dull, and not persistent in our practice. In other words, we're checking out. Dogen says, when you listen, study, and practice, and realize unsurpassable complete enlightenment, it is deep, vast, and inconceivable. You learn this unsurpassable enlightenment either by following a teacher or by following a sutra. Moved by what is spoken and heard, unsurpassable enlightenment, you vow to refrain from unwholesome action and practice refraining from unwholesome action. And so here again, Dogen is making this very direct link between what we do in each moment with our thoughts, words, and actions, the consequences of those within ourselves and with around us, and realizing enlightenment. And so this idea, you know, that we can divide and conquer, right? That we can divide our moral being right? Our sense of what is skillful or not skillful, our sense of what is helpful and what is not helpful, and sort of put that over the here. And over here, I'm just going to focus and develop my concentration, realize enlightenment, and live happily ever after. And so what the Buddha, what Dogen is saying is that is not possible. That will never work. That will never happen. It's based on a faulty view of just about everything. And so Dogen says we arouse this vow, this desire, and the monastic who was talking about ardency that I was drawing from. He says it's worth noting here the centrality of desire in ardency, in right effort, in practice. He says all phenomena are rooted in desire. Everything that arises within the conditioned mind is rooted in desire. And this observation applies to skillful as well as to unskillful phenomena. Without skillful desires, it would be impossible to develop the path. This means that the path is not a truth available to passive observation. It's a truth that comes forth from our desires, from our intentions, from what we set about to do, and then do it. Something that can become true only if you want it to become true. It can happen only if you want it to happen. So becoming clear, opening your heart, living well, being a benefit to the world, alleviating suffering can only happen if we want it to happen. So when we chant, desires are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. That means the illusion of desires as something that have their own force, that are happening to us. It means the illusion that that they self-exist, and the illusion that they can't help us. We're only here because of desires. And so what all of this is really saying is we have to, understanding what's wholesome and unwholesome means understanding which desires do we want to encourage and strengthen and practice within, and which ones do we need to let go of. And so we're moved by encountering the teacher or the sutras, and then that brings us into how do we live our lives. And so this brings forth bodhicitta. And so obviously we have to become more and more clear in our practice of what is helpful and what's not. And that might sound easier than it actually is, right? Because our conditioned mind, our habits, many of them are not good for us, right? We know that on a basic level. We know that certainly about some of our habits, but others we believe are good for us and they're not. And so we have to see into that and see why are they not healthy? Why are they not helpful? It might be the thing itself. It might be our relationship with that thing that isn't helpful. And so we have to see that not just, you know, outright acts of, you know, anger and greed, or outwardly or overtly hurting someone, but also on the more subtle levels of just our distractedness, our fantasies, indulging in annoyance and irritation and impatience. And by indulging, I mean just giving way to, you know, feeling that we have a right. I deserve to be annoyed with you because you're being annoying, right? And therefore, I sort of make a dwelling place of my annoyance because I feel justified in it. And so it's really like saying I am justified in suffering. And so I go, rather than realizing, wait a minute, I'm suffering. this is suffering. I don't want to cultivate a life of suffering. So how do I practice this annoyance in such a way that is refraining from unwholesome action? Our negative thinking is very difficult to let go of because we think it's true. Right? Most of the thoughts we have we think are true. And so it's very difficult, particularly when they're so personal. And for some reason we feel so, doesn't it seem like we feel like we should dwell in negative thoughts about ourselves, as though somehow that's going to make us better people? Doesn't usually seem to work out like that. It just makes us more miserable people who then act more miserably towards others. But it can be very difficult to let those go, to see them as unwholesome, because it seems like we're just hearing the voice of truth about ourselves. To awaken to liberation, to be free of the confinement and the kind of drag on our lives of self-clinging, means we have to see that drag. We have to feel the burden of it. We have to feel the confinement of it. And because we've become so accustomed to that, we don't necessarily feel it that way. We don't experience it that way, at least not until we do. And for that, we have to become much more aware. And for that, we have to develop mindfulness and concentration. So that we're not confused by and continuing to sort of live in obedience to our false views and our unhealthy desires. So to refrain from unwholesome action or to cease from harm is to practice being free in each and every moment. That's what practice is. It's to, if we want to be compassionate, we have to practice being compassionate. It's not that we can be a jerk or an asshole, and that because we're doing all this good stuff over here, that at some point we're going to stop being an asshole and be compassionate. We will continue to be a jerk until we stop practicing being a jerk. Right? Which again is easier said than done. Because whatever that means, that's just a big catch-all. Right, being a jerk for just not, not living so well. That we have to, it actually has to shift. If we want to live in awareness, we actually have to practice being aware. Right, so distractedness does not lead us to awareness. So just sitting here on the cushion and just indulging distractedness is not bringing us closer to mindfulness and concentration just because we're sitting on a Bodhi seat, right? We actually have to be manifesting that awareness. And of course it doesn't, and then we forget and we get distracted. That's normal, right? So it doesn't mean that we're not sincere or that we're not practicing. That's how we become aware, is by practicing when we're focused and in state of concentration, and practicing when we're not. Dogen says, when you refrain from unwholesome action, the power of practice is immediately actualized. And it's actualized on the scale of the entire earth, the entire universe, all time, and all dharmas. This is the scale of refrain from or cease from. And really what he's, I think what he's saying here is that when we act in this way, when we practice in accord with our self nature, the nature of things as they are, in other words, when we're practicing within reality, that the power of that is immediately actualized. We may not recognize it. In fact, often we don't. Certainly in the beginning years of practice, they're just moments where we recognize, we're able to see and be cognizant of what's happening. And it's because we're so hooked on sort of expected results. I'm doing this, this is the result I want. That's not the result I'm getting, so therefore nothing good is happening. And what Dogen is saying is that that action is being actualized on a level that is that the whole earth recognizes, the whole universe that goes throughout time and permeates all dharmas, all things. That's the scale on which things are happening. The fact that we're not aware of that just means that. And so what he's really talking about is how powerful our actions are. We begin to see this. And in Sesshin, everyone, no matter how you rate your Sesshin, right, either in the midst of or at the end, no matter whether this is your first Sesshin and you feel like your practice is very fragile, not very strong, everyone in Sesshin, if you're sincere, has glimpses of what Dogen is speaking about here. It may be a slight shift, a slight power, a slight letting go, an unstable concentration. And yet the seeds of this is actualized on the scale of the entire earth are there, are present. And that's just part of the faith, you know, to trust that Dogen and these teachers are not lying. This is the truth, not a lie, right? We chant that in the Heart Sutra. Isn't that an interesting line? In the midst of all of this, you know, grandeur of Prajnaparamita. Oh, by the way, we're not kidding, right? This is actually true. Because we might believe it for Dogen or the Buddha, we might believe it for others, but we very often won't believe it for ourselves. And so Dogen is saying, believe it. And that's important because that faith is essential, because if we were only to practice based on or in accord or equivalent to what we were able to measure, we'd never get beyond I don't know what. Right? And so all of us who continue practicing have that faith. Right? Because much of the time we're not seeing. Right? Well, what tends to loom large in our mind is the struggle, the obstructions, you know, the impediments. But if we're persisting, it's because on some level we have that faith that something, that this is both a refraining from unwholesome action and a practicing of wholesome action. Dogen says, when you move within refraining from unwholesome action and doing wholesome action, mountains, rivers, and the earth, as well as the sun, moon, and stars practice. And they, in return, move you to practice. And so because these actions are manifested, actualized immediately on the scale of the whole earth and the entire universe, the mountains, rivers, and earth, the sun, moon, and stars are infused with that. They practice, and they, in return, move us to practice. In other words, there's a subtle kind of resonance and affinity that is taking place. In walking a true path, the truth of the path as being true in this world, it's not true in a void. It's not true in some abstract sense. It's true because it's in accord with the way the world is. The path is the world. The path is our life. And so because of that, when we walk that path, our practice, is in resonance then with the earth, with the universe, with the laws of nature. And so there's this intimate and very deep kind of affinity that is being established, that is being brought forth. Right? Bodhidharma says when we don't understand things and live in accord with not understanding things, then all, everything that is actually true appears to us as false. In other words, we experience the world as being discordant, out of sync, disjointed, right? Not working very well. Just at a very deep level. When we do understand, Bodhidharma says, then everything that appeared before is false, we now realize is true. And so that sense of mutual resonance, of intimate communication, that's what makes this a mystic path. That's what makes this, brings us to this cushion. That's what we begin to discover and tap into in mindfulness, in a state of concentration, in body being serene. Because it's so subtle, right? And so our popular culture tries to give us that happiness, that joyfulness, but it has to scream at us to do it, right? To try and evidently to get through, right? And it's not very satisfying to actually experience that level of contact. We have to become very, very still, like the earth itself. Dogen says, do wholesome action. Although myriads of wholesome actions are formless, unborn, undefiled, they arrive at the place where wholesome action is done faster than a magnet drawing iron. Its power is stronger than a Vaidambaka storm. That's a very storm with a violent wind. The great earth, the mountains, rivers, the lands of the world, or the increasing power of action cannot hinder the intentional encounter of wholesome action. And I think this is so important because he's talking about how powerful goodness is, right? And there is something about our consciousness that often is magnetized to what is negative, right? To what is binding, right? And we can even take a kind of delight in that. I mean, in a sense, we do a lot. Our culture does. And so that can suggest that that's what's most powerful. But what Dogen is saying, and he's not alone, this is not just a Buddhist recognition, that wholesome action has a power that is faster than a magnet drawing iron, that's stronger than the strongest wind. And that nothing can hinder the intentional encounter of wholesome action. Your intention to practice what is good, what is skillful, what is liberating, what is true. That ultimately nothing can hinder that. Why is that true? Because it's your mind. It's your mind that has the intention to encounter what is good. And nothing outside of you can take that away from you. It can things outside of us can make it much more difficult, for sure. Absolutely. And that's why creating spaces and times that do the opposite, that make it more conducive, easy, that foster, that encourage and support, that are so important. So that when we enter into realms that are less supportive, we already know that that intention is in my mind. I can bring that forth at any time. He says, even if unwholesome actions seem to fill the world and swallow up all things, refraining from is your emancipation. Wholesome action is wholesome action in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end. So even when things seem very difficult, and I want to talk about this more on Friday, refraining from or ceasing from harm, unskillfulness, all that is binding, all that causes regret, that which dampens your joyfulness, that which makes your body not serene. To free yourself of that is emancipation. And that's why, you know, the discipline of sitting in stillness, right? Because when we begin sitting, our bodies are not serene. They're not. It's our basic nature, but we have to rediscover that, allow ourselves to actually be serene. And so we work within this freely given stillness that we agree to together, but then we try and bring to within ourselves, right? More and more, on more and more subtle levels, to let the body be serene. Even when it feels restless or agitated, to meet it in serenity, to not fight it, to not argue, right? To not hate, but to meet it in calmness. In ancient times, there was a governor who studied with Zen Master Dao Lin. And one day he asked him, what is the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma? Master Dao Lin said, refrain from unwholesome action. Do all that is good. And the governor said, if that's true, then a three-year-old child could say this. And Dao Lin said, a three-year-old child could say it, but even an 80-year-old person cannot practice it. And Dogen responds to this and says, what a pity, Governor. Why did you say this? Because you have not touched upon the Buddha wind or encountered the Buddha's teachings. Do you know a three-year-old child? Do you understand the principle of a child's inherent capacity? That you would speak this way of a child? Do you not understand how powerful they are? Do you understand how powerful you are? An old master said, when you are born, you have the capacity to roar like a lion. When you are born with this capacity to roar like a lion. The lion's roar is to manifest the Dharma, is to manifest what is ultimately true, and to actualize it. He says, the capacity to roar like a lion is a virtue of the Tathagata, turning the Dharma wheel. It is turning the Dharma wheel. It's your capacity, it's my capacity. And practicing on every level, very simple. Right? And so, because when we're 3 years old or before, that's when we started, hopefully, hearing this essential teaching. Be good. Don't do what's not good. Right? We're still working at it. Right? And we're going to keep working at it. Even an 80-year-old person has a hard time practicing that. So simple, so deep. Right? It is liberation. And so to trust this and to see all of the opportunities during Sesshin, right? Outwardly and particularly inwardly, right? And to trust this so that we don't indulge, right? We practice earnestly, right? Not indulging all of those unskillful patterns, streams, energies, right? That is the most powerful thing. It's your power. Roaring like a lion.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.